So we're going to go back to Hebrews chapter 11. We're sort of kind of coming to an end of this chapter, and we've kind of walked through, as the writer has shown us, portrait after portrait of what we've called over the years the heroes of the faith, people who embodied what the writer tells us defines faith. It is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. These are people who made difficult choices in life. They did so, and they were enabled to do that because they saw their hope. They visualized their hope. They saw the invisible was made visible to them. It's not that they didn't have any doubts or fears. It's that they made the choice to walk by faith. They looked at what God had said, and they said, okay, I'm going to live by faith. I'm going to live as if I can see this, as if I can see my future, as if I can see the very unseen things of God, as if I can actually see them. They made those choices. We know that the writer is saying these things because he is, in fact, writing to a small band of Jewish converts who are experiencing themselves. They're going through persecution. They're going through hard times. And in fact, there's a hint that worse times are ahead. And so, you know, they're going to need strength. They're going to need an encouragement. And so he is writing them, and he's bringing them, showing them all these portraits, and really sort of just drawing their attention to these people who had faith and then found that their faith got them through whatever difficulty that they were going to go through. And of course, the idea is that they themselves would then remain steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of God, as Paul uses that expression in 1 Corinthians 15. And he said, well, why do we need to know that? Well, because we're going to face choices, right? And it may very well be that the times ahead for us are even more difficult than anything that we might have in our past. We don't know that. We don't know what the future holds. But we do know that life will always include choices. Choices that are at times very difficult. Choices where we have to make the decision of whether we're going to walk by faith, live as if God is real, or maybe do what our flesh wants, or maybe just go along with the crowd. And so we need that encouragement. We need that strengthening. And in fact, this is the means that God uses to strengthen us. He shows us these people who have used faith, and they have endured. And likewise, we can endure by faith. He's coming to an end. He's given us these big names we might think of. But he doesn't want us to think that that's all the people that have lived by faith. The fact is that there are millions upon millions of stories that could be told. There are all the people in the Bible. But then beyond the Bible, there's millions of people who have never named. We have no idea, but their story is just like these people. They have exercised faith. They have believed God. They've staked their life, their future, their eternal soul on the reality of God's Word. And they have not been disappointed. Okay, so there's millions of other stories. And so the writer, he knows he can't just keep going on and on about listing these names. He has to bring it to a conclusion. And so we pick up in verse 32 of Hebrews chapter 11. And what shall I say, more say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon and of Barak and of Samson and of Jephthah, of David also and Samuel and of the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword. Out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens, Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonments. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, were tempted, they were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens of caves of the earth. And these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise. God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. So we'll stop reading here. So again, the writer is acknowledging that he just can't keep talking on and on, enlisting these people. He's got to move on. And so he kind of brings this discussion to really a beautiful summation. And in doing so, he points our eyes toward these countless heroes of the faith that are not maybe listed. Now, he does list a few. He lists Gideon and Barak and Jephthah and David and Samuel. And by and large, these are familiar to us. We know Gideon. Gideon was that man who God found hiding from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him, and he said, "The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor." Which seems like an odd thing to say to a man who's hiding. And yet that's what God... But God knew what he was going to do with him, right? Gideon didn't know. Gideon probably would not even think it possible that he could be used of God. And yet God knew exactly what he was going to do with Gideon. And you say, well, you know, Gideon should have had more faith. It's easy for us to look at these people and sort of dismiss their the odds that they were against. But I just a few minutes ago went over and went back to the book of Judges and reread a little bit of the story of Gideon, and there's a passage in there where it describes the Midianites as like grasshoppers in number. And then their camels were like the sand at the seashore. I mean, just think about that. When you think a camel, that's, you know, that was a primary weapon of war. I mean, they were you know, for weapons of war, and they've got them like sea sand, like the sand at the sea. So the point is, that's overwhelming odds. And so Gideon is faced with that. And then God does something even more remarkable than that. He deliberately puts Gideon in a position of weakness. Here he is. He's already reluctant to have faith. And God puts him in a position of weakness. He takes his 32,000 men that he had. Again, the 32,000 is going against an army of men that's just ginormous. And he takes his 32,000 and he whittles it down to 10,000. And God says, okay, you still got too many. And he whittles it down to 300. And it's just very remarkable. And then on top of that, God says, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go and I want you to fight them. And here's your weapons. I want you to take a trumpet, a pitcher, and a torch. I mean, that's pretty tough. All right. And yet we know the rest of the story, right? As Paul Harvey says. And so we know that God did give him the victory. Likewise, we could turn and we could read about Barak and how that Barak was likewise sort of a reluctant hero. Deborah had to sort of rebuke him about his lack of faith. And yet in the end, we see that he did exercise faith, that he did lead the army of God, and God gave him the victory. Samson. Samson's the unlikely hero, right? I mean, Samson's a guy that was given so much by God. And yet he seemingly squandered it. He wasted it on his own benefit, his own gain, even seemingly for amusement. He just took for granted that which God had given him. He treated it carelessly, and I think he knew in his heart that God had given him this strength to deliver the people of Israel from the hand of the Philistines, and yet he wasted that. And of course, we know, you know, how that he was a very weak man. Particularly with regard to women, and Delilah in particular, and so we know how, you know, what happened to him, how that he lost his strength, and yet we also know that in the end, Samson turned with faith to God and prayed for his strength to return, and God gave him his strength back, and he killed more men, more Philistines in his death than he did in his entire life. So again, a familiar story to us. Jephthah probably a little bit less so for us. Jephthah was also a man that God greatly used to give victory to Israel. And yet his victory was marred by his own foolish, rash vow. He made a vow that he was going to sacrifice to God the whatever came out to greet him from his home. And lo and behold, his daughter came out, which was a foolish thing to say, and perhaps even more foolish for him to go ahead with it. I think it was wrong for him to do that. God didn't require him to sacrifice his child. God's not into child sacrificing, and yet that's what he seemingly did. And so again, he did have faith. He was used by God, even though his victory was marred by his foolishness. David, of course, we know the stories of David. We know that even in his youth, David was a man of tremendous faith. A man who just, even as a boy, fought off the lion, fought off the bear. And then, as a ruddy young youth, he goes against the giant Goliath, and God gives him the victory there. So again, a man of tremendous faith. Samuel was a man that, from his youth, served God. The Scriptures make a point to let us know that though he was a little child, they made an ephod. We've been studying about the ephod in Wednesday night services, and they made him an ephod that he would wear, as a working priest. I mean, even as a child, he did that. And so he was a man that God used to say some hard things to some difficult people. He had to go to his own mentor, Eli, and tell him, this is the judgment of God that's going to come upon you. Later on, he had to go against Saul, King Saul, and tell him, speak the truth to him, even though, it was not a pleasant truth to be told. But nevertheless, I mean, these are men that were greatly used of God. They had some things in common. They were men that, in each case, really, they served at a time when faith was pretty scarce. We think about the people in the book of Judges, and there is a time when people largely did that which was right in their own eyes, not unlike our own day. People did what they thought was right. Didn't matter what God said. There was a lot of people like that. And yet these men, they stood for God. They were obedient to God. In the case of David and even Samuel, there was evil in their days, just like there is in all days. And yet, they stood for God. They fought against the odds. They went against the flow. They exercised faith. And then there's another thing that's interesting about all these people. And I sort of highlighted some of it. They all had flaws. Every one of them had flaws. Every one of them were in some way at fault at some point in their life. And you say, well, why is that? Well, we all are, right? I mean, there's no perfect faith. I think, honestly, I've used this definition before, or at least made this statement before, that sometimes we get in our mind that faith is the absence of doubts, or that faith is the absence of any kind of fear. And I don't believe that's true. I believe that faith is obedience despite any doubts, despite any fears. I think Gideon, even after God had confirmed all the things to him, I think that he still, when he's going up against this army with nothing but the trumpet and the pitcher and the torch, there's going to be some fears associated with that. And yet God gave him the victory. So again, I think that these men were all flawed. We've already talked about some of them. Gideon, of course, his reluctance. Barak, his reluctance. Jephthah, his foolishness. It's just foolishness. David, we know the story of David. And of course, Samson, we know the story there about their own weakness. People who Samson, in Samson's case, he was blind to his own weakness. It just, one of the remarkable things about his story is how many times Delilah, basically showed him her hand. She showed him exactly what she was trying to do. And yet, he kept on. And so he was blind to his own weakness until he was literally blind, right? I mean, God, made him blind, or the Philistines did, and God used them to sort of judge him, I guess. But nevertheless, we know their story. Samuel, we think about Samuel. Samuel's this great man of God. And he was. He was tremendously a great man of God. And yet, even Samuel, in his old age, he kind of grew careless. And he named his own sons to be judges over Israel. And they were not good men. They were men who basically used their position for their own gain. And so, you know, he was sort of careless in that regard. So again, I think God deliberately moved upon the writer to include these people, to show us these people with faults. Because, again, all men have faults. We all have faults. We're not perfect people. And no faith is perfect. Each of us are flawed in some way or another. Some of us, you know, you maybe try to trace your road to faith, and you say, well, that's a twisty road, you know. And maybe there was a few detours along the way where you had to you left and you had to come back to the path. But so it's a twisted path that you followed to God. And likewise, you know, many of us, we can look at our own weaknesses. We have weaknesses. We think about Samson, think about David, think about even Samuel. All these men had weaknesses, and we have our weaknesses. And yet, God honored these people. He included them. He honored them. It's just a reminder that God approves faith wherever He finds it. It's not about the past or our own present weakness. That should never be something that keeps us from exercising faith now. Think about that. You know, our own weakness, our own past, should never be the thing that prevents us from walking by faith now. You know, Brother Michael used the illustration about blooming where you're planted. Wonderful illustration. It's actually a biblical concept. But the idea is that, you know, wherever you are, you're supposed to serve God. So in some sense, the past does not matter. Our own weakness does not matter. What matters is that we walk by faith now. We walk by faith now. We persevere until the end. That's the thing that God has called upon us. That's what He's calling upon us to do. And so He goes on. The writer goes on. He says, you know, he mentions all these, and he starts talking about some of the blessings that they had, that they received through their faith. He talks about, you know, maybe the blessings of how that God used certain people or groups of people to win, to have victory. They subdued kingdoms. They wrought righteousness or you know, brought about justice. They obtained promises. They did this by faith. He talks about people who had very small personal victories where maybe they stopped the mouths of lions. We think about Daniel. They quenched the fire, the violence of the fire. I think about the Hebrew children. They escaped the edge of sword. Well, there's a lot of people in the Bible that escaped the edge of the sword by faith, right? I thought about Elijah and reread his account. I always liked that story where the king sends the captain and his 50 soldiers to go get one man, go get Elijah. And the man comes up and says, the king says for you to come down. And he said, well, if I'm a man of God, then, you know, let fire come down and consume you. Woof! They're gone. You know, burn them all up. And then the king sends another man. And the man says, listen, the king has said, oh, man of God, you need to come down right now. You need to come quickly. And he said, well, if I'm a man of God, let fire come down and consume you and your 50. Woof! They burn up, you know. And then the third guy comes along. He says, oh, man of God. You know, he humbled himself. He fell on his knees and he said, you spare my life and you spare the life of these men. The king is requesting that you come. But, you know, the point is, he recognized, he learned the lesson. Of course, God allowed him to do that. But again, you know, Elijah, I mean, you think about 50 men come against one. And the odds aren't good. And yet God, by Elijah's faith, delivered him. He talks about there, just the strengthening power of faith. He says, out of weakness we're made strong. Wax valiant. Let's pause there on out of weakness we're made strong. Again, a lot of times, you know, Satan emphasizes our own weakness. He shows us that, and we're very mindful of our failings. When somebody says, well, you know, I don't know how to lead a song, or I don't know how to teach a lesson, or I don't even know how to pray. And we make statements like that. We think that we cannot be used of God because of our weakness. And yet, he says, out of weakness we're made strong. Gideon's a prime example of that. Here's a man that was hiding from the Midianites, and God said, oh, thou mighty man of valor. God turned him into a mighty man of valor. And God can do the same thing with us. He can strengthen us to do whatever He's called us to do. So He talks about that. He talks about how they wax valiant in fight. They turn to flight the armies of the aliens. There's so many times where God just blessed even the people of Israel through faith to defeat the enemy. And again, many times they were fearful and the odds were against them. So many times we see God took the underdog and He shows him to be victorious. And that's something God tells us that He does. He likes to take the things that seem foolish to men and show it to be wise. And so again, we see that over and over again. He talks about women receive their dead raised to life again. I think about Elisha and the little boy that had died, and Elisha raises him. So again, it's just a reminder of all the things that were accomplished by God, of course, but through faith. And then He sort of turns on us. He kind of changes the emphasis there. He says, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. Well, wait a second. They didn't want that. Sometimes we think that faith means getting what we want, getting the deliverance in the form that we think is best. We want God to get us out of the situation. And yet sometimes God's will is that we endure the situation, that we persevere in spite of the situation. And so the writer, I think, again, God used him to very deliberately remind him, listen, there's some that were tortured, and yet they still had faith. There were some, he says, that had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonments. They were stoned. They were sawn asunder. They were tempted. Interesting that that's thrown in there, right? They were tempted. Joseph was tempted, right? Joseph was tempted. The woman tried to tempt him. And yet he showed faith. How can I do this evil and sin against God? I can't do this and sin against God. So he was tempted. And by faith, he persevered without giving in to the temptation. They were slain with a sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, and tormented. These are people who suffered want. Suffered want. It's good that the Holy Spirit moved upon the writer to include these. Because we need to remember that God's not a genie in the bottle that we sort of rub the bottle or the lamp and get our wishes. We rub it with prayer. Okay, God, I'm in this bad situation. This is the thing I'm facing. You need to make sure that I get out of this. That's not always God's will that you get out of it that way. You think about the writer Paul in the book of Philippians. And there he is in prison. And he basically says, I know God's going to deliver me. I just don't know how. I don't know if He's going to deliver me by delivering me or if by death. But for me to live as Christ, to die as gain, kind of doesn't matter to me which way it goes. Truth be told, I'd really just prefer Him just let me get killed and then I could go on and be with Him. That would be great. But it's probably more needful that I stay here and probably God's going to keep me here. But really, I would just as soon He let me go on and go. And that's the attitude that we see in that. We see it in the Apostle Paul. We see that faith. And so, again, we need to remember that we don't know the way that God's going to deliver us. But we do know that God is for us, right? We know that God is for us. And deliverance in one form of another is certain if we are saved. We know how our story ends. We know that we rise to meet Him in the air. That we're changed in the moment, twinkling of an eye, and that we are ever going to be with Him. So we look at this list. We look at these people. And we think about this, and we see the enormous things that people endured. Some persecutions. Some just suffered want. And we are reminded, verse 38, where he makes it says, of whom the world was not worthy. The world rejected them, and yet the world was not even worthy of their presence. That's a remarkable statement. And what did their faith get them? He says they obtained a good report. In the end, God said, well done, thy good and faithful servant. I believe that every believer really wants and desires in their spirit to hear, well done. And we like it in the natural setting, right? I mean, you know, you do a job and you do it right. We like for the boss to come along and say, boy, you did a good job there. Angie leaves me some assignments around the house, and I do it, and she comes along, and she says, boy, that looks good. That's nice. We like that sort of thing. But to have God look on our whole life and say, well done, thy good and faithful servant. Well done. You say, oh, well, I've already messed up my life. I've already screwed up. So did these, right? I mean, we've already looked at that. We looked at Samson. Samson wasted most of his life. And yet God included him because in his death, he showed faith. It's never too late, right? It's never too late. It's a great blessing to hear, well done, my good and faithful servant. And again, he mentions that, you know, that there's a reason why he's mentioning all this. And it is, you know, for our benefit. He says none of these received the promise. Well, they received some promises, right? You know, they received some promises. We know that. Gideon was told that, you know, I'm going to deliver the Midianites into your hands. And he received that, right? So what is he talking about? He says the promise. It's the promise of the Messiah. All these people, they didn't live to see the salvation of the Lord. They knew to be looking for it. They were, you know, they showed faith by looking toward the promise, the promise of the Messiah, the reality that God is not going to leave man in his sin. But they didn't see it. God having something better for us. He's allowed us to look back. You know, they were looking forward. They were seeing the shadow. But we see the substance. We see the reality of Jesus Christ. We see the reality of lives being changed by the power of the gospel. And we're able to witness that. And we're able to experience it ourselves. So we have something greater than they did. And so it is all the more important that we don't waste our life. That we run our race that is set before us. We know that's where he's going, right? Wherefore, seeing we are also compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. Now it's our turn. It's our turn to live by faith. To run the race that is set before us. To run with patience. Now, what does patience mean? In the Bible, it means to endure. To run with endurance. What does endurance look like in your life? In your life. Maybe you're going through some trials. And you're having questions. The path that is ahead of you is very steep. God says you've got to run the race. And it's hard. It's difficult. Maybe it's not that it's so hard right now. It's just that relentless pace. The step after step after step after step after step. And you're getting tired. And everything within you wants to just quit. You begin to rationalize why maybe going with the flow, going with the crowd, disobeying God, maybe you begin to rationalize, well, in this situation, really, it's understandable. And yet God calls upon you to run the race of faith, to press on. That's the message here. The finish line. The finish line is just ahead. Don't quit now. Don't give up now. Press on. Look to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Look what He did. And know that He is the very one that is strengthening you for the race that you have. So run with faith. Maybe you're here today and you're lost. And you've been listening to these lessons about all these great heroes of the faith. You begin to think to yourself, you know, I'm in a bad situation right now. I've got some problems in my life. I'm looking at, you know, how God blessed all these people. I see how He blessed Moses. I see how He blessed Gideon. He faced that big army. I'm facing some pretty big problems myself. I sure would like God to come along and get me out of my situation. I was praying this morning and I started thanking God for the blessings that He'd given me. And my mind went to, you know, Jimmy's sickness. And Jimmy's bleed. And I thank God once again for delivering Jimmy. Because I believe it was God that did it. And even as I said the words to God, the thought came to me that while it's good and right for me to be thankful and grateful for God's physical blessings, the spiritual blessings are more important than that. As far as I know, according to their profession of faith, God has saved all three of my children. He gave Jimmy physical life when he was near death. But more importantly, He's given spiritual life to all my children. So if you're here today and you're lost and you read these stories and you're thinking, well, boy, it sure would be nice to have God in my corner because, you know, I'm in a jam and I sure would like some of these blessings that He's got. I sure would like for Him to, you know, take care of my problems. I want to remind you that your greatest problem is that you don't know the Lord. And no matter what troubles you may have in this life, it pales in comparison to what awaits you if you die in your sins. I mean, that's the real problem of man. It doesn't all the wars, all the diseases, all the other problems do not compare to the judgment that awaits us. Man's greatest need is the forgiveness that is available through Jesus Christ. And what you need to do is to understand that and go before God and confess your sins. Believe the gospel and be saved. That is the message of Hebrews 11 for you. Because you need the deliverance that only can come through knowing Jesus Christ as your